Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot, oh my. It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now, for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others, here's your host, paranormal researcher Patricia Baker, on the one, the only, Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Baker, and Michelle, my co-host, Michelle Claire, the great psychic medium, was supposed to be joining us, but guess what? You know, she was traveling around doing workshops. She was in Sedona, and she got COVID. And she was planning on being on the show because she actually felt pretty good, but then she didn't. She started to feel a lot worse. So anyways, I know we all hope that she gets better soon. It's a miserable thing to be dealing with, but at least we know it doesn't have to be deadly, which is good. It can be like a bad cold or a flu. So anyways, Michelle, we all hope you feel better soon. And we've got lots of crazy stuff going on. That collider is in use, again, in Switzerland. And also, the guide stones in Georgia got blown up at around 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning. So who knows what this is all about? It's very, very unusual. And as we're watching our country do a nosedive, it's very frustrating for those of us who don't want to lose any more rights and feel that we live in a free country. But tonight, we are going to take a trip into a world. And it happens to be the world we live in, by the way, where aliens live here too. And our guest tonight is a terrific person, Jerry Wills. His wife is also very terrific, by the way. And I heard Jerry do a presentation about his friend, the alien. I said, we've got to get Jerry on the show to talk about this because, yes, we've heard this before. Aliens are here, but Jerry has a personal experience of this. And Jerry is a straight-up guy. He's an internationally renowned healer. And you can find him at jerrywills.com, by the way. He's got a book out. You can read his book. But this is an incredible story, and I wonder, as I'm sure you do too, how many other people have had experiences like this but haven't shared them yet. So, Jerry, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, Patricia.
Well, it's great to be with you again, and you always have something exciting going on. Now, I was so impressed when I heard your presentation about this, and I thought, we got to talk about this. I know my audience is dying to hear this. This is a really incredible story. So do tell, how did all this get started for you?
Well, you know, the way it started was, excuse me, I'm having a cup of chaos. Though that's a cup of coffee, folks, for you who are wondering what I'm talking about. it all started as a result of me going back and forth to Peru. I was taking people on guided tours there. Those tours were based on the Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. I had his endorsement to do it. I got that before James was really ever an internationally known figure and really well respected for his book. He was still selling them out of the back of his car. Anyway, I was taking people on trips to Peru. And, you know, in Peru, you have a lot of people talking about UFOs and sightings and aliens and all that stuff. And a lot of it happens down there, not just Peru, but Brazil and Chile and, you know, all over the place in the Amazon. So I was always, you know, watching and wondering. I had had contact with a different group of extraterrestrials when I was growing up in Kentucky. This was face-to-face contact. It lasted about 5 years, and I hadn't seen those folks in quite some time. And I thought, you know, if there's anybody down here that would like to talk, I'm open to it. It had been quite a while since I'd had any contact with those other individuals. So I went to Machu Picchu. This was, you know, gosh, I would say back in the early 90s. And that's when it wasn't like Disneyland for the elite. And nowadays, you go to Machu Picchu and you get a ticket, you go through, you're escorted, and you leave, and glad you came, get out of here. But back in those days, you got a ticket, you went in, and that was it. Go have fun. The park closes at a given time, and if you're not out, we're going to lock the gate and lock you in. And that's as stringent as it was.
Right.
So I went in. I went to the Intihuatana, which is one of the features at Machu Picchu. It's called the Hitching Post of the Sun. And I sat there for a few minutes, meditated. Now, in the past, when I would try to contact these folks I'd been in contact with when I was much, much younger, it was not always, but occasionally that contact was struck up to occur because of using telepathy. I would send the message out, you know,
right,
telepathically. So this particular time, I'm thinking, yeah, I want to talk to somebody. So I sat there. It's supposed to be the most powerful place in Machu Picchu. So I sat there and centered myself. It was very beautiful. And I just sent out a message. Anybody out there? I want to talk. And I waited. Nothing came back. So a little bit more time goes by, and I send out the same message. Is there anybody there? I want to talk. This time, in my head, I heard a message come back, who are you?
Oh.
Which was a bit surprising.
Yeah.
You knew
it was coming from outside of you. It wasn't coming from a voice inside, but it was your voice. It's coming outside from outside, right into your head.
No doubt.
Wow.
Right into my head. No doubt about it. And I've had this kind of contact before, so I understood how it feels, although I didn't know the voice. And the intonation was kind of like, what the hell are you doing? So I sent a message back, and I said, I'm Jerry Wills. There was silence. I said, I was in contact with Zoe, and I named off a couple others, in Kentucky during these years. They said they're from Tau Ceti, and if I wanted to make contact, this is how I would do it. I said, who are you?
Yeah.
Another long pause. And they said, they said, basically, we'll get back to you.
Jeez.
You know, I forget the exact phrasism, but that's what it amounted to. You know, we'll look into this or something like that, but it basically, we'll get back to you.
Yeah, they didn't give you anything.
Well, yeah, I was like, what the hell? So I got up, had a cigarette, walked away, pondering this odd characterization. I mean, that's not what I expected. I thought, oh, hi, how are you doing? You know, something like that.
Yeah, because you already did have a relationship with these other folks from other worlds in the past. So what was the hesitation on their part this time?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't know these people, but I didn't know the other people either. They sought me out. I didn't seek them out. So, like, okay. So I went about my business, went through the rest of the trip, went on back home. It just so happened I had another scheduled trip a month later with another group of people. And I'm finding myself back in Peru again. And, of course, I reached out telepathically trying to, you know, touch into somebody. No answer, nothing. So I get back into Peru, and then the route that you take to get to Machu Picchu, regardless of where you come from, you end up in Lima. Then you take a flight from Lima to Cusco, and then you have two options. In Cusco, you can take the train and go all the way to this little village called Agua Caliente, which means hot water. There's hot springs there.
Mm-hmm.
Or
nice.
you go down into the Urubamba Valley. The valley's about, I think it's 17 miles long. I don't really remember how long the valley is. But you go down through this valley. At one end of the valley is a village called Pisac. A lot of ruins, very interesting place. And at the opposite end of the valley is a place called Urubamba. And I'm sorry, Ollanta, not Urubamba, that's the valley. It's Ollanta. So in this particular, you know, time, we took the train directly from Cusco all the way to Agua Caliente. Got off the train. It's just a sleepy little village, or it was. It isn't now. It's a tourist trap. Mm. But
oh boy.
It's just a sleepy little village, and you make your way to this very rustic hotel that would cost you $16 for a night.
Wowee. That's a bargain.
Yeah, well, they thought they were making money hand over fist at $16, because you can go get yourself, you know, a pizza for $2, and it's a big one at Shea McGee. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Shea McGee's got a parrot. It's a very interesting place for pizza and beer.
Huh.
Well, anyhow, the next morning, you get up, get on the bus, and you're going up to Machu Picchu. So, just like, you know, always, got myself together, got the group together, we go out, I've got the tickets for the bus, I'm handing everybody their ticket, and we get on the bus. Well, the bus is like a rickety old school bus.
Ooh,
back
nah,
during this
that
time.
Sounds dangerous. Ooh.
And it looks like something out of the 40s, maybe.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
The windows aren't square like a school bus you think of. These are sort of rounded, top and bottom.
Uh-huh.
And the seats are basically a piece of Naga hide over a 2x4.
Oh, comfortable.
Metal, yeah, metal frame. And the route up to Machu Picchu is basically switchbacks. So you go out of Agua Caliente, you go over the Urubamba River, and then a little bit past that, you turn left and you start the switchbacks going up the mountain. And the whole thing takes about 45 minutes from start to finish. So, because this thing is crawling, it's just crawling up the mountain. And the road is narrow.
You could probably walk
that. And there are no... Yeah, well, some people have tried, and it does work out that way.
Oh.
But it's all straight uphill.
Yikes.
So personally, I didn't like being in that claustrophobic, the windows don't open. Not a lot of room. People are jammed in there. So I would tell the driver, I'm going to ride on top. I'd go to the back on top, and I'd sit up there with the, you know, the bread and supplies for the hotel Machu Picchu, which is at the top at Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. So I'd ride up on top, and I figured if this thing gets a flat tire and suddenly wants to go off the road, I have a better chance of jumping off of the top of this bus and grabbing a tree someplace than I have of being inside there just rolling down this damn
yes.
mountain.
Good thinking, yes.
And the view up there was spectacular.
Oh, yeah, it must
so
have
you're
been.
Just... You're just crawling along, you know, going through this jungle and going up and over and up and over and back and forth. Well, on this particular day, I'm on top, and we're just sort of chugging along, going across the river there on the at the Urubamba River and across the bridge, and there's this fellow up ahead, and he flags down the bus, which isn't that unusual. So he talks to the driver, and he walks to the back, and he climbs up on top with me.
Huh.
Which I thought, that's pretty cool. He probably has the same inclination as I do. So he climbs up. He looks, you know, he's not skinny, but he's not plumped out either. He's about 6'2", 6'3". Looks like a hiker, you know, that you might encounter in Peru. Comes up, climbs over past me, sits down near me. The bus starts up, and of course, it's chugging along. It takes that left, and it's going up the mountain. So, as you might expect, you run into people all the time on a trip like this. And one of the first things, aside from saying, you know, hi, I'm Jerry, or whatever, you know, the second thing that comes out of somebody's mouth is, where are you from?
Yeah, right.
So he introduced himself, says, hi, I'm Rich. I said, hi, I'm Jerry. Nice day, isn't it? Yeah, it's a great day. And so we're chugging along, and I said, so where are you from? And he's looking out across the vista off to my right, and he says, I'm from the Pleiades.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So how
and
did you process
so
that
of,
one?
I laughed at him. I
yeah.
thought that was goofy.
And how did he look? I mean, here he was sitting next to you on top of this bus. I mean, did he look human? Did he look like he was from another world? How did he look?
He just looked like another person. You know, you're traveling down through there. You see all body types, all ethnicities, all languages and dialects and people with broken English and people that speak the King's English. I mean, there's just all kinds of people. It's really, really, that it's the crossroads of the world. You never know
yeah.
who you're going to run into in a place like this.
Right.
Cusco more so, because it's a city and it's just full of all kinds of people. But in Aguascalientes, yeah, you know, those that are hardy enough and not necessarily brave enough anymore, but... that just have that inclination to go someplace that distant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an interesting thing when you meet people like that because they're like you somehow. That's
right.
kind of the underlying
right.
theme. How they're like you, you really don't know. But they are an adventurous spirit, and so, you know, it's like we're pals in a way. Whether it's men or women, I've run into plenty of women that were doing things that I really wasn't interested to do. You
oh,
know, they
okay.
were just doing all this crazy. I can tell you some of that too if you want to know. Nothing.
I don't know if I do.
Well, there's nothing for adult audiences, but I mean, it's just that they were very unique individuals.
Yeah.
I do have the adult versions too, but I won't go into it.
Oh, okay. Well, but again, here you had reached out telepathically a while back on your last trip. Nothing came of it. They kind of blew you off, said we'll get back to you. Now this guy comes mysteriously, shows up, wants to get on the bus, gets on top of the bus with you, not in the bus, on top with you, and tells you he's from the Pleiades. So was there anywhere that you thought maybe he was?
No, not at all.
In that moment or not?
No, I laughed at him. I said, sure you are. And he kind of looked at me kind of hurt, and he says, no, really, I am.
Oh,
and I said, look, I live in Phoenix, and Barbara Marciniak came out with a book called Bringers of the Dawn, and now everybody in the New Age circles in Phoenix, they either are from the Pleiades, they might be walk-ins, we don't know, or they're channeling somebody from the Pleiades, but everybody that I talk to has some affiliation and says that they are from the Pleiades. So that you're from the Pleiades? Sure you are.
Yeah. Join the club.
Yeah. So he just kind of chuckled and he said, yeah, we're familiar with Barbara Marciniak and her book. He said, I really don't know that she represents us exactly.
Hmm.
He said, but no, I am. I'm from the Pleiades. And so I kind of stopped laughing. And I said, so what are you doing here?
Yeah, he said, would be the question I'd ask. Same thing.
He says, well, you said you wanted to have contact.
Whoa, here you go.
At that moment, it was kind of like, dun, dun, dun.
Right.
And I was speechless. He says, didn't you reach out to us and say you wanted to have a conversation? I said, well, yeah. Just so, let's talk. Oh, my gosh. It was kind of like one of those moments where you get a slight bit of vertigo because you're on top of the bus and it's turning, and you have a slight bit of reality check needed because this was totally unannounced and very surprising.
Yeah, it's like you stepped into the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly. I'd almost forgotten I'd even done that. Since nothing happened, we'll get back to
right.
you. Yeah, okay, sure. See you later.
Yeah.
But here's this guy sitting Nobby here
people.
Saying that he's from the Pleiades. Yeah.
Right.
And he says he's from the Pleiades, and I wanted to talk, so here I am. Let's talk. Oh, I just didn't even know what to talk about.
Yeah.
You
must have been still astonished.
Yeah, I was. And then, I guess because I was just like kind of floored by this,
mm-hmm.
he just sort of smiled and says, it's all right. We have plenty of time to talk. You're going to be here for a couple of days. And I said, well, yeah. I said, I just wanted to reach out because I'd had contact with, others. He says, yeah, well, I know. You'd spoken about that, and we looked into it. You were contacting Zoe and the group that Zoe was with from Tal City. And I said, yeah. And once again, I was just like, it took my breath away.
Yeah, because they knew your history with them.
Exactly. So, we sat there and chatted a little bit. So how long have you how long have you been here? You know, what do you ask?
Right.
He says, well, I just got back to Peru, he says, just a few days ago. It was time for me to come back here anyway. So, well, what were you doing? He says, oh, I was in California. What is the name of that? I can't think of the name of the beach, a crazy place. Anyway, he was at this place in California, Venice Beach. That's what I'm trying to think of.
Okay.
He said he was in Venice Beach studying the culture there. And I said, really? He says, yeah, dude, absolutely. It was gnarly, man. And it's like, I said, gnarly? And he said, well, you have to talk like them if you're going to be there. He says, I'm a sociologist, anthropologist. And so I was studying the culture, me and a couple of others. And, you know, to do that, you immerse yourself in a culture. You eat what they eat. You do what they do. And you learn from that experience. And that's what I was doing. I was learning from the experience, and I had a pretty good time. He says, but I got to tell you, the food, it really does take its toll on you.
And what
I said,
was this,
what
all fried stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, he says, well, you know, the burger joints, pizza joints, street vendors. I said, yeah, well, there's probably a couple of good restaurants around you could have gone to.
Yeah.
He said, well, yeah, did go to a couple of those. My favorite places were the salads, where they serve good salads.
Now, let me ask you this one question when you saw him, because you're very, very tall. And was he as tall as you, or did he look anything like your physique?
Yeah, pretty much.
He did? Okay.
Yeah, I'm 6'9". I'd say he's probably 6'6", 6'7". He was pretty tall. I'm not very good at gauging how short other people are compared to me.
Mm-hmm.
But because everybody else is short, you know?
Right. We're all shrimps compared to you. But, yeah, I wondered if he was similar to you in height, because the Pleiadians, they say, are tall. They run tall. So there you go.
Well, he and I saw eye to eye when we stood up.
Okay.
You know, he had on boots. So did I. You know, he had on, of course, kind of baggy trousers, you know, like safari equipment trousers and shirt and belt and backpack and water bottles hanging off and stuff like that. He was pretty tall. I noticed as we were talking that I had there was this vibe that I got from him that really put me at ease.
Hmm.
It was almost transcendental in nature.
Mm-hmm.
To where it was unnatural at ease. Not your typical, I'm just feeling casual feeling, but it was like relaxing vibes being beamed into me.
Mm.
And I asked him, well, why are you coming here? And he told me that this was so much like his home. He says, it's a lot like where I'm from. And I just love being here because it reminds me of being at home. He says, you see these mountains? Look how angular these mountains are. And this air is so fresh and pure and all this greenery and the flowers, and it is a beautiful place, that part of the Andes. He said, this is a lot like home. He says, that glacier over there, he says, we have that too. He says, so is this where you come to regroup and get yourself, you know, just kind of back in the groove before you go back out again? And he says, well, no, we live here for a while. He really didn't specify any time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm done here, then I'll probably go back home and be there, and the next thing comes up, and I might be coming back here or might be going somewhere else. I don't know. So that's how it is when you study other cultures. Because I specialize in human cultures, which now in retrospect
wow.
tells me there are other humans out there in the universe.
Yeah, so I was thinking the exact same thought when you just said that, yes.
Hmm. But at the time, it didn't really occur to me. I was just so in la-la land having this conversation with him. It was like I'd taken a couple shots of Jack Daniels or something. I was just sort of mellowed out and like, okay, this is fine. Yeah, sure. So,
well, it's so out of the blue. I mean, this happened out of the blue because the last time you tried to contact these snobby people, you know, that was a month prior. And they didn't exactly welcome you with open arms. They treated you like you just walked into the office of the CEO and they'd let you know. So, what a surprise.
Yeah.
And here this guy just waves down the bus and joins you, and here he is. Here, I'm from the Pleiades. What are you supposed to do? Oh, my God.
Well, I can tell you it was absolutely startling.
Yeah.
You know, there's still that little, you know, little bit of doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying the hell out of the conversation. It's a good conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So the bus finally arrived up there to the top, the embarkation point. And as usual, you get off the bus, you've got all these people, probably 75 people, which I had a group of about 18, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically have your tickets and you go up through this really crude wooden fence-like thing that's about 12 foot tall, and it just opens. There's a door there that just opens. You go through, guy standing there, you hand him the ticket, and that's it. You go on in. And you can come in and out as much as you want because you've got a little stamp on your hand on the inside of your left wrist. So you can go in and out as much as you want to. The buses are done for the day. So the people that are there are the people that are going to be there. And when it comes time, the buses will start up about 2:30. And we're there now. It's about 10:30 in the morning. And between 2:30 and 4:30, there are buses. After 4:30, there's no more buses, and it closes at 5. So you're just stuck up there if you don't catch that 4:30 bus. That's how it was. I don't know how it is right now.
Hmm.
So we get off the bus. I climb down. He climbs down behind me. And he just walks with great purpose, just strode right up the stairs and right in through the gate, just goes on through like nobody's business. Before he left, he turned and he said, I'll see you on the inside, Jerry. And, of course, the people with me are like, oh, who's that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you about it later. Rich, his eyes were so clear. They were blue. Have you ever seen gem quality topaz?
Yes.
It's just gorgeous, this blue color.
Yeah.
That was the color of his eyes.
Oh, my. Well, that's different.
And I also noticed that his earlobes were weird. They were longer than anybody I'd ever seen. not like grotesquely longer, but there was just a noticeable length to them that I had not really seen on anybody else before. I notice little things like that about people.
Yeah.
He was not clean shaven. His hair was a mess. He didn't wear a cap, but he was clean. So, yeah, I'll see you inside, Rich. And I get all the people together. We go up, we go through, tickets handed off, stamps put on the inside of the left wrist, and we're walking on into Machu Picchu. I've done this many times. For the people who are with me, they are blown away. Because, let's face it, walking into Machu Picchu, it really blows your mind.
Yeah.
So, we make our way first here and then there, and we're just casually walking through. We've got the whole day. There are guides that I have hired to be with the people. And if a person wants to see this or that, you know, tell the guide, they'll take you to see it. Otherwise, they'll just take you through as a group and show you everything the first hour, and then after that, they cut you loose, you're on your own. So, I've done this so many times, and there's no reason for me to do it. I'll catch up with everyone later. I decided I'd just walk over to one of my favorite places. It's called the Temple of Pachamama. As you're facing Machu Picchu, it's down towards the end, off to the right. And I like to go there, and it's just quiet and beautiful, and the energy is amazing. There's a great big stone sitting upon edge, and it is shaped exactly the same as the mountain. If you stood in front of the stone gazing at it, the mountain right behind it is shaped exactly the same way. So it was made to look like that mountain.
Right.
So I'm heading over that way. There's this fellow who was on the trip. He came with his sister. His name was Bob. He was from New York. And Bob is an emergency room psychiatrist, psychologist, trauma psychiatrist or something like that. But he was like the emergency room trauma guy.
Right.
And he was tall. He's probably 6'4", 6'5", African-American. And he's my buddy, and he's sticking with me. So that was his decision. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Come on, I'll show you the Temple of Pachamama. Great, I'd love to see that. And he's a tall, skinny guy. So we go, you know, casually walking off in that direction. Now, Bob has a backpack, not very large, and around his neck are some binoculars. And these are cartoonish. You know, in the cartoons, they bring the binoculars up and you see the eyes in the end of, in the end of the binoculars, and they are just
bulging
huge.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just huge binoculars. That's what Bob had.
Okay.
He wanted to do some bird watching. He wanted to look around and so on and so forth. So he's carrying these huge damn binoculars. We're going out across this little pavilion. There's a tree there. And round the corner, and just before we get to the Temple of Pachamama, there's Rich.
Oh.
He's walking up to us. And he says, "Hey, Jerry, you going up to Huayna Picchu?" And I said, "No, not right now." So I've got the group here. I'm just going over to the Temple of Pachamama. He says, "I'm going that way too. Mind if I join you?" And I said, "Sure, come along." And he's all grinning and happy. And Bob is quiet. And Bob sees something. And he says, "You go ahead on. I'm going to look at this over here." So I walked over with Rich, and Rich said, yeah, I'm going to go up to the top of Huayna Picchu. Well, Huayna Picchu, when you look at a picture of Machu Picchu, in the distance at the end of Machu Picchu, you see that there's this mountain point, you know, sticking up, and then in front of it is Machu Picchu. And that's Huayna Picchu. And there's a path that goes up there. To get up there, you go past a little guard station. No one's there, but you sign your name in. Because if some reason you don't come back down, they're going to send people looking for you. That's the idea.
That's a good thing. Right.
Because going up Huayna Picchu is a bit treacherous. It's also a lot of switchbacks. There are really, there's nothing in the way of guardrails. You just keep going up and climbing higher and higher. At one point, there's a rope. I don't know what it's like now, but there's a rope thick as your wrist, and you have to hold on to that rope and pull yourself climbing up to get up this really steep part. Then you continue up. Then there's a long staircase that a lot of people have seen pictures of that's like, oh, that looks totally dangerous.
Yeah. This is beginning to sound like something out of Ninja Warrior, if you've ever seen that show. I mean, it's just one obstacle after another. Oh, my goodness. But you were doing it okay, and Rich was too.
Well, no, I've done it many times. I've done it many times.
Right. So you were okay with all of this. How about Rich? For him, it was nothing, probably.
Well, see, that's what is weird about it, because went to the Temple of Pachamama. That's where the path begins to go up to Huayna Picchu.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go up to, you know, Huayna Picchu. And at the very top, there's a peaky point. And you sit on that peaky point, and you see everything. It's really like the end of a pencil. It's the peaky point.
Oh, my gosh.
So I've taken Kathy up there before.
Really? Kathy's brave.
Yeah, she wouldn't stand on the peaky point and reach for the sun, though. I did that.
Oh. Can't imagine why she wouldn't do that.
Oh, she thought I was going to fall. Of course, the lightning overhead kind of made my hair stick out in all directions.
Oh.
I had to get out of there.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, I get to Huayna Picchu, and I get to the path that goes up to Huayna Picchu with Rich, and I'm standing there at the Temple of Pachamama, and he says, okay, I'll see you later. And I said, hey, we're going to be here tonight, so if you're around, we're going to be over here at the Intihuatana. So, you know, what time? I said, I don't know, probably 10:30-ish. He says, okay, well, if I can make it, I will. So he takes off, and Bob shows up. He says, your friend's going up there? I said, yeah, this is going to take him 45 minutes. I mean, and if you're in really good shape, you'll make it in 45 minutes easily.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in great shape, it's going to be an hour and a half.
Ooh.
Because it's difficult. It's really steep. And there's
so many stairs.
So I'm standing there talking to Bob. He says, did you see anything? He says, oh, I saw a few birds. I was looking at the mountains. He pulls up his binoculars and he looks up towards Huayna Picchu. So I told him the little peaky point and you can sit up there, and he wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 10 minutes max. And he's looking up there, and he says, well, your friend's up there already.
Oh,
I said, no, that's impossible. I said, that can't, no, it's got to be somebody else. He says, no, I think you should take a look. And he pulls off these big binoculars, hands them to me. I adjust them so I can look through them. I mean, they must have weighed 30 pounds.
Oh, my God. It's like a telescope.
Hoist them up. Really? Yeah, like two of them, you know, joined together. I hoist them up. I look up there, and there is Rich. And he's looking right at me, and he's grinning, and he's waving.
Oh, how did he get up there so fast?
I pulled him up. Hell if I know. So I pulled the binoculars down, and I said, "That's Rich." He said, "He got up there pretty quick." I said, "That's impossible." I said, "Well, how did he get up there?" I said, "I don't know." I pulled him up again and took a look. Rich is looking off in the distance. Then he sort of glances back over his left shoulder and looks back down at me and a little wave again. Then I pull the binoculars and give them back to Bob. I said, "I don't know what to make of that." So we meet up with the rest of the group at the Intihuatana. And I surprise them and tell them tonight we're going to come up here and do a meditation at night. And, you know, it'll just be us. Nobody but us. You guys can have the whole compound to yourself. And Bob says, "Can I spend the night up here?" And I said, "Well, they don't allow that." He says, "I really hope I could spend the night up here." I said, "Look, I'll tell you how you do it. There's this cave I know of right over the edge, right over here. If you go into that cave, it's where the llamas sleep. And you go in there, it's very comfortable, and you can spend the night in there. And in the morning, don't come out until you hear people walking around and tourists talking." He said, "I'll come and get you in the morning. I'll be here first thing in the morning when it opens up at 6 o'clock. He's like, "Okay, great. I'm going to spend the night at Machu Picchu."
Wow.
So, you know, I'm kind of running this around in my mind about how Rich got up there so fast, but nothing made any sense. So, I basically let it go. We leave Machu Picchu. We go back down to Aguacaliente. We have a nice dinner. Their pepper steak was delicious.
Yum.
And, you know, we go to our rooms, and we're going to meet up again at 9 o'clock. We're going to go back down to the bus because I've already paid the bus driver $100 to take us up there. And he's going to stay as you know, at least until midnight. Midnight, he gets a little edgy if it's after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet again. We get on the bus. This time I'm riding on the inside. It's just, you know, 15, 18 people that are on the trip. And we go up. Bob is all ready. He has his sleeping bag and some food and snacks, and he's going to spend the night, by golly. And his sister, who he's traveling with, she knows this. So I'd say Bob's in his 40s, mid-40s.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And his sister is, I think she was 50. Right in there.
Mm-hmm.
She was a doctor, a regular MD. Well, anyway, we get up there. They let us into Machu Picchu. They close the gate behind us. We continue. We walk through Machu Picchu, and in the dark, it's just amazing. Made our way to the Intihuatana, and people are now taking their time. They're going to sit on the Intihuatana, put their hand on either side of the stone. They're going to do their prayer and meditation. And I timed it out. Everybody's going to get about 15 minutes. Because then there's something else to do. So they're doing that. And so after about five people, they didn't need me anymore. They were kind of maintaining their own schedule. They had it worked out between themselves. But person know it's time. Yeah, they're really good people. So I walk away. I'm going to go have a cigarette. So I walked away from the Intihuatana, and in the direction I was walking, if a person wanted to look this up, you're at the Intihuatana, and you can tell if you're sitting there, you're facing towards the west. So this is towards the south, and you walk through this stone door framework thing, like a wall. And then from there, you walk a little bit farther, and it's like a peninsula that sticks out, and it has a drop-off all the way around it, except for the stairs you came up on. If you walk too far, you're going to fall about 30, 40 feet into a bunch of cactus and rocks.
Ouch.
It's just no,
not a good idea.
No way you're going to... you wouldn't want to do that.
No.
So I'm standing out there looking at the night sky. There's the Southern Cross. It's just gorgeous. Having a cigarette. Finish the cigarette. All right. I need to go back, see how the folks are doing. So we've got something else to do tonight. I was standing at the very tip of this peninsula, by the way. And I turn around, and I take about 4 steps, which is about half the distance of this peninsula, and there is the sound of cellophane, like on a cigarette pack, just crumpled up the cellophane part.
Hmm.
Not really loud, but present. There's nothing in nature that sounds like that.
Yeah.
I heard it, and I thought, what the hell is that? I turned around to investigate it. There's Rich. He's standing where I was just standing just a few minutes, a minute or so ago. So I was surprised, kind of startled. I said, Rich? He says, hey, Jer. So, how did you get there?
Yeah.
He says, are you having fun tonight? I said, yeah, the folks are having a really great time. I'm still wondering how the hell he did that. So I said, did you climb up here from down there? And I walked over and looked over the edge. It's like, I don't know how anybody could survive that, because it's a bunch of cactus and thorns, and it's dark.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, I use this. And he showed me on his belt. He had this thing look like a small silver, about the same size and shape as a small Zippo lighter, is attached to his belt. And what I think would be like the center of it, because there's no lines or anything, it's just a solid piece of metal. But in the center of it, about, maybe dime-sized, probably a little smaller than a dime, it was just a blue glow, just luminous. It wasn't shining out. It was just luminous blue. He says, I use this. He said, what is that? He said, well, this is how we travel around. I said, oh, really? He says, yeah, we can use this and we can go different places. Said, is that how you get to the Pleiades? And he laughs, says, oh, no. No, we couldn't do it that way. We have. Well, you call them flying saucers. We use those for travel. And so we started talking again. And I said, so what is it that I just have a feeling there's something that I'm missing here that we need to talk about. He says, well, actually, I did have something I wanted to ask you about. He says, you bring some very interesting people down here, obviously. He says, all these are really nice people. They're all very interesting. He says, so I was thinking, would it be all right with you if me and some of my team were to just mingle with the folks you're traveling with and just talk to them? I said, what would you talk about? He says, nothing important, really. Just find out who they are and what they think, what they believe. You know, just to kind of get an idea, you know, person to person, what they're like, what they think. And I said, well, sure, I guess. I don't see any harm in that. He says, well, the thing is, you can't let them know who we are. Because if they knew that we weren't from here, then they wouldn't act the same way. They can't really know, maybe after the fact, but I don't know. He says, I think you should be careful about letting them know who we are, but it would just help us. And I said, okay, sure, I see the reasoning there. I don't have a problem with that. So you're just going to talk to him about stuff. He says, and in return, I'll do something for you. I said, oh, like what? He says, well, we know things, and we could tell you things. I said, what kind of things? He says, well, you know, things that are in the future. I said, well, that'd be nice, like lottery numbers. He said, no, nothing like that.
Oh, darn.
Just, you know, events. You know, events. Events ahead. Things that might be useful for you to know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, sure. Okay, that sounds fine. So, you know, it was like this agreement. He says, okay, you need to get back to your people, and I need to get back, you know, to mine. So we'll meet up again, though. We'll meet up again. So during this trip, he says, I don't know if it'll be during this trip, but you'll be coming back down here again. I said, yeah, I've got another trip planned. I told him when. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, I was going down there 2 or 3 times a year. He says, well, when you get into Peru, wait till you get to Cuzco and then send me a message. I said, you could do it in the Amazon as well, but we can plan, you know, when we get a message from you. I said, how do I send you a message? And he just kind of gave a little laugh, and he says, it's the same way you sent a message to get me here in the first place. And he tapped his head. I said, oh, telepathy. He says, yeah. That works every time. So, all right, then I'll let you know when I'm back down here. I said, so you're going to leave? He says, yeah. Well, you want to see how this works? I said, well, tell me how. How does it work? He says, well, I put my finger on it, and then it generates this field, and then I just go. I said, well, can I try it? And he said, no. And he laughed. He said, all right, show me how it works. He says, all right, I'll see you later, Jer. Took his finger, just put it on the little blue glow, circular blue glow, and it sounded like cellophane off the cigarette pack again. You know, the sound.
Okay.
And in an instant, it started and it ended, and there is this blue sphere, probably, I don't know, it was like a big jawbreaker, best I could tell. It wasn't with really finely detailed edges.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bit amorphous, but it was a blue sphere. And it just hung there in the air. And I swear I could hear him laughing in my head. And then it just casually floated off, heading towards the east, and went out over the Temple of Pachamama and just flew on towards the mountain in the distance. I basically couldn't see where it went because past a point there were, well, you know, Machu Picchu has these clouds hanging in the air. And
mm-hmm.
It wasn't so bright you could see it at a distance anyway. It was just gone. And so I'm just like, oh, I need another cigarette. That was
really? Now, at that point, were you totally convinced, yes, he was from the Pleiades?
Oh, yeah. At that point, no doubt about it. This guy is definitely, he's not of this world.
Right, right. Oh, my goodness.
I was thinking about his request.
Yeah.
Seemed like a good idea.
So your group did get to mingle with these people, but they didn't know where they were from. So they didn't know they
right.
were Pleiadians. But, again, they didn't
yeah.
sound offensive or harmful in any way. They just were being sociologists, trying to figure out people here on this planet.
Yeah. Anthropologists, sociologists. The folks
so
on that particular...
Which is strange to me, though, because I have to say, that's just something so strange about that. Because if you... I mean, I know that we were created by ETs. There's no doubt about that. I mean... So much evidence points to it. Yet, here they are studying us and these, you know, aspects of our culture like Venice Beach. It just seems, I don't know, there's no, I don't have the right word to describe how it makes me feel. It's a little strange. I don't doubt for a second that Pleiadians are here and he's one of them. I don't doubt that at all. But I just wonder, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're so advanced. You have technology that's so far beyond us. Why bother with coming here?
Well, I don't know. I've thought about it, too. And the only thing I can come up with, you can read about Machu Picchu or Venice Beach in a book. You can see videos about it. But until you've actually
right.
gone there,
mm-hmm.
that experience... is much more valuable having had it in person. You can glean
that's
so much
true.
More information that way.
Right.
And that's about the only rationale I could come up with.
Well, that's a good one. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see what you're talking about there. But that must have kind of blown your mind a little bit, seeing this blue orb that he just traveled away in. But that must have been how he got to the top
orbs.
Of that needle.
Yeah, I'd seen those blue orbs on several occasions and didn't know what I was looking at.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, are you still in touch with Rich and his group or not?
No. No. No, I haven't. I haven't had any contact with them in quite a few years. But there's more to this story.
Go ahead.
So everyone's finished at the Intihuatana. We're going to walk through Machu Picchu. And the idea is that, because I've already shown Bob where this cave is, so he's going to just not be there. And when the guard asks, where is Bob, I'm just going to say, he decided to walk back to Agua Caliente on his own. Because there's no guard at the front gate. The guard is inside the Hotel Machu Picchu, and we have to knock on the door and tell him that we're done, and he'll come out and lock the place up.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob scurries off over the edge, goes down to the cave. That's the end of it. And we get on the bus, tell the guard, oh, Bob walked on down. And we take the bus down. And that concludes the night. The next morning, we're going to get up and get back up to Machu Picchu early because that afternoon we're catching the train back to Cusco. So we're up there at 6 o'clock in the morning. As we're going across the bridge, across the Urubamba River, where I initially saw Rich, coming out of the trees on the road is Bob.
Huh.
And he just looks weird.
Oh, no.
So I tell the driver, I said, stop here a minute. That's one of our people. Stops. I get out. Bob's sister gets out. Bob will not talk to me. He won't talk to his sister. I'm going back to the room. He takes off walking. And she says, what happens? I can't talk about it. I won't talk about it. And he just keeps on going. I don't know what's happened. We go up to Machu Picchu. We come back down. It's time to do that bit where we get to the train station. We get to the train station. Bob is already there with all his luggage, standing by himself. I go up, Bob, are you okay? And he just says, I can't talk right now.
Hmm.
I was like, okay. And his sister is just sort of needling him. What's going on with you? What happened up there? And he goes, I can't talk about it. Just don't talk to me. Just leave me alone. We get back to
and
Cusco.
And this is a psychiatrist. I just want to remind everybody, right? This guy is a psychiatrist. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Happy, all excited guy, going to go up to Huayna Picchu, going to do this. He did, too. He went up there. All this stuff he was going to do, the giant binoculars. Mr. Happy-go-lucky, I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah,
so
big change.
We get back to Cusco. Now we have a free day in Cusco just to go shopping and look around. It's a lot of fun. Bob stays in his room.
Hmm.
We get back on the plane the next day, flying back to Lima, go to our hotel room. Bob won't talk to anybody. He stays in his room. It would be a couple of months before I heard from his sister, who was, you know, a friend also of mine. And she called me up. She says, Jerry, you won't believe what Bob told me. I said, what happened up there? Did I do something wrong? He says, no, it has nothing to do with you. You did everything right. He just wasn't prepared for what happened.
Ooh.
I said, so what happened? Well, Bob was in that cave you told him to go to. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, just a couple hours after we left Machu Picchu, about 2 o'clock in the morning, this green sphere, just huge, came down out of the sky, came up the valley, went right in front of where Bob was. They came and got him and took him inside. And he won't tell me what they had to say or what they did. But he said that he didn't really believe extraterrestrials were real. He says, they're very real, and I don't want to talk about it. He says, it scared the living hell out of him.
It sure did.
He said it lit up the whole area green. Well, at night, there's like
been...
this layer of clouds.
Right. But this wouldn't have been Rich because he said he didn't want them to know who they were. So who was this that came and got him?
I have no idea.
Hmm.
And it might have been the people associated with Rich. Bob might have sent out a message, you know, thinking it would just be nothing. No idea.
Oh,
I really
moly.
Don't know. I don't know
so
who it
you
was
never,
or what
you
happened.
Never heard from Bob after that? That was
ever
it?
Again.
Wow.
Nope, and I've tried reaching out to him, and he won't talk to me.
Oh,
and his
man.
Sister
what
told
us
if you could talk to Jerry, Jerry thinks you've done something, you know, he's done something to really upset you. And he says, just tell Jerry he didn't do anything wrong. He did everything I asked him to do. I just didn't expect this.
Mm.
So it was one of those deals that scared the living hell out of him.
Yeah, I guess so.
The next time we went down to Peru, we started off in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in Iquitos. And we're getting ready to leave Iquitos, get on our flight. This is mid-afternoon. We're flying on Fawcett, as I recall. That's an airlines there. And the power goes out. The whole inside the terminal, boom, no power.
Mm.
And people are like looking around, and it's just raining like you wouldn't believe. So
oh,
it maybe is because of that. That's what people are thinking. Lightning, flashing. All of a sudden, these two people come, excuse me, carrying this guy in, and he's got a bad burn on his right leg where his motorcycle fell over and the pipe burned his leg really bad.
Mm.
And they lay him on the floor right in front of our group. Well, immediately, of course, I'm there. I don't know what to think. But immediately, one of the gals is a nurse. The other gal is a doctor. And they're giving orders to the other people in the group, do this, do that, get your blanket things out, you know. And people are making a makeshift bed for him. And all these, you know, people in the airport were just ignoring this kid. This kid was hurt, except for our group. And they're cutting his pant legs up. They're taking a look at the wound. They're dressing the wound. They're taking care of him, doing everything they can. The whole group then gets together and does like a little healing thing to try and help him. And then, you know, these two people pick him up, walk out of there with him. They get on one of these three-wheeled motor cars. It's like a motorcycle mm-hmm. with three wheels. You ride in the back. It's open air. They take off. As soon as they take off, boom, the lights come back on. The rain stops. The sun comes out. And our flight is now about to arrive. So we leave. It's like, wow, that was just a whirlwind of things.
Yeah, sure was.
Get into the Machu Picchu area again. I'd already let Rich know. And I actually tried in the jungle. I tried again at Cusco. And didn't really get an answer back, but there's Rich. And there's these people that at that point from Iquitos made friends with all the people in our group.
Mm-hmm.
And this person had, or this couple had this other couple that were talking to them. This other couple had that couple, because most people travel in pairs. And so they start making fast and famous friends. And they don't show up in Lima, but they do show up in Cusco just briefly. And the next thing you know, they're having dinner with them. And then we're in Machu Picchu, and by golly, look at that. They're in Machu Picchu as well. How about that? And so these people have been traveling with us all the way from the jungle. And then I meet up with Rich. And he and I are sitting at Shea McGee, place for pizza with a crazy parrot.
Right.
I'm having a Coke. He's having a sparkling water, having some pizza. And I said, are your people mingling with my group? He says, oh, yeah, they've been with you since Iquitos. I said, you know, the damnedest thing happened in Iquitos. There was this kid, these two people brought this kid in. I mean, he's not really a kid, but, you know, he was like a 20-something that had a bad burn on his leg from a motorcycle. And he just sort of looked up at me and grinned. And he said, yeah, that was us. I said, what do you mean?
Yeah. What does that mean?
He says, well, we, you know, the power went off. And we brought him in. He says, you notice we went right to your group, right? I said, well, yeah, I thought that was a little odd, but. I said, well, and what did your people do? I said, they sprung into action. They did everything they could to help him. He says, exactly. Now we know the kind of people that we're dealing with.
Sounds like a little test.
Yeah. They did those little tests. They tested me like that.
Oh, boy.
They tested me like that once. I didn't know I was being tested. All I knew was I was trying to help somebody. There's this gal.
Why would they do that? I mean, to me, I don't know if I just have a thing about Pleiadians, but I just find that, again, kind of offensive. I mean, if they have the abilities I do believe they have, they should know these things. And to put you or your group in positions like that, and to me, I question that. I really heavily question that as to why are you doing that, really? What's the real reason behind it? I mean, do you ever feel like that with them? Like, what are you really up to, you Pleiadian guys and girls?
My basic inclination was, what better way to find out who you're dealing with than to present someone being hurt? How do you respond to that?
Crisis,
what kind of person
are you?
Trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your true nature shows in a situation like that.
Right. It does. But it's not like they were going to turn around and give you the keys to the kingdom once they found out you guys were all good people. It's like, again,
no,
this sociological experience that, or experiment, I should say. I guess that's what bothers me about it. And I'm not saying they're bad people or anything, they're bad Pleiadians, I should say. But it makes me wonder what in the world they're really up to. And I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it does test someone's character when they're facing a crisis. And what will they do to help that person? And, of course, you and Kathy both draw magnificent people to you. I mean, people of good character. Who go on those trips with you. So, yeah, of course they're going to respond that way. Why wouldn't they know that? That's my question.
Well, because there's 20 people. Not everybody is going to be, you know, the kind of person that would respond to someone being hurt. They could just as easily have been, well, take them to the hospital. There's nothing we can do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But instead,
they tried
to
help.
They had compassion.
Exactly.
And I think
exactly.
That, you know, our ability to show compassion and concern isolates us, or not isolates, it separates us from others who lack that compassion or concern. And the people I presume, the people that they wanted to have conversations with, they really wouldn't be interested in talking to someone who doesn't have any compassion or concern for their fellow person.
And
so that's how I rationalize why they did it the way they did it. In one sense,
I love that you're in contact with them, and obviously you're a very special person. And you are someone that they would be interested in communicating, should be interested in communicating with, because you are who you are. And you have a lot of integrity. You've got a big heart. You have telepathic abilities, not only with humans, but with animals, ability to heal. You want to help people and animals. And so, yeah, why wouldn't they want to talk to somebody as wonderful as you? So I love the fact that you put out a call and they eventually got off their rear ends and responded, which was good. That was nice, very nice. So they waited a while.
I guess they had to vet me.
Yeah. Again, that whole process, it's like, look, when we've heard so many stories of different races of aliens coming here, abducting people, doing experiments on them, and it can be very offensive. It's like, okay, you know, nobody asked for that. But at the same time, you hear about somebody like Carl Higdon, who encounters this very strange-looking alien when he's elk hunting, and puts his rifle down. And I do believe that that's what that alien responded to become friendly with Carl, instead of treating Carl like just another experiment. They became friends, and they had communication with each other to the end of Carl's life. So it's, mm-hmm. Are we making friends with these people, or are we just an experiment to them? I guess that's my question.
We're not an experiment to them. I don't see it that way. The way it was explained to me is that the people in this world became isolated from the rest, a great number of the races that are out there of humans. You know, humans are not unique. Humans are pretty much a standard, and humans exist on many different worlds. But there was a point in time where that being in touch with each other was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And we forgot who we are, who we were, the details of our origins and all of that. It was lost. And we just became people here on this earth. And this is where we started. This is where we end. And that's the way it is, and there isn't anything else out there, because that information was either forgotten or kept from us.
Yeah, exactly.
According to Rich, there are quite a number of planets where there are humans. Some of them are not as developed as this world, and others, like themselves, are exceedingly advanced compared to what we know and what we have. And the hope is that there will come a point in time where we can realize each other, and though we have our differences, we have the ability to look at each other and go, we're not really that different. We just grew up
right.
in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an issue with the dogma that exists, not on just this world, but it's on other worlds as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's the limited thinking, as he put it, that keeps us isolated from everyone else out there.
Yeah, I think this is why I think it's wonderful, beyond wonderful, that you have the ability to contact them, and they ultimately did respond in this situation. And I see other people working with Dr. Greer to do something similar, you know, to try to extend a hand of friendship. And I like all of that, because the government's lying to us, as you know. They lie like crazy, and they're going to act like they're going to tell us something we don't already know, but they never do. And I know it drives them insane that people like you and others like Dr. Greer are doing these groups that are in direct contact with ETs, and they're not going to the government saying, tell us what's going on anymore, because they know that's useless. They'll never get anything there. But your personal experience that you've shared tonight is just so interesting. It's so heartwarming. It's again, you have a friend, or you were acting friendly with each other, you and Rich. It's lovely. You know, it's heartwarming. It's nice. So that's what I like to see, because it brings it more out of the realm of we're experimenting on ETs and ETs are experimenting on us, and more to the place of that hand reaching out in friendship. And the fact that they respond to you is remarkable. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there, Jerry, that are asking for contact, and they're not getting it. Right?
Well, that's true. I've had a number of people you know, even offer to pay me if you just help me get in contact.
Right.
Oddly enough about Stephen Greer, I talked to Rich about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of chuckled and he said, well, tell Dr. Greer that if he wants to have that conversation, that I'll have that conversation with him. Now, bear in mind, at the point that I did this, I'd already been in touch with Rich a number of years. I'd seen
right. A
UFO land. I saw him get out of it. I met others of his party. So I had a pretty good history with them.
Right.
And he said, you know, tell Dr. Greer that if he wants to have that conversation, I'll have that conversation with him. And I said, really? Okay, I'll do that. And he just sort of smiled and says, he won't take you up on it.
Really?
I said, why not? He says,
yeah.
You'll find out.
Oh.
Just invite him.
Okay.
So, as it turned out, I came in contact with him at an event in Phoenix.
Ah, okay.
And so he was checking into his hotel. I was there, and I introduced myself, and he was just sort of, you know, blank look on his face. And I said, I understand you want to make contact with an extraterrestrial. He says, yeah, that's right. I said, well, a friend of mine is, and he said, happy to meet with you. And he just got this pissy look in his face and he said, just get away from me.
I'm
not interested.
What happened there? Is he just not believe you or is he, what about that? What's going on there?
Well, he didn't know me from anybody.
Oh, okay.
I said, are you sure? And he just turned his back to me and went back and, finished checking in. I don't know what he was doing. And he didn't,
well, he missed
he
the opportunity
the desk,
of a lifetime.
And when he left the check-in desk, he just walked right past me, didn't even glance my direction.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I figured he's just a jerk.
Yeah.
It doesn't take that much to be nice.
No, it doesn't at all. And not at all. Especially, you know, here's somebody who says that this is what I want. And you would think he would be kind to someone who's reaching out that way. Well, that's a shame. But again, my point is that I think we're all much better off making direct contact than trying to just read an article or believe what the government's trying to convince us of. I mean, direct contact, like you mentioned, you know, immersing yourself or meeting someone like you did with Rich over so many years, you've learned so much, and you have a friend. Even though you haven't talked to him in a while, you probably could if you wanted to. Oh, gosh, we're running
now
out of time. This is terrible. Oh, we have like another 40 seconds left. Go ahead.
Kathy met Rich a few years after all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, she didn't really meet him. She saw him, and he waved, and then he just vanished. Just, went, just gone.
Oh, boy.
Thanks for having me on, Patricia. It's been a lot
of
fun. I hope your audience enjoyed it.
Oh, my gosh, now, and I feel like we've only scratched the surface here with what you learned through your friendship with this guy. With this Pleiadian. I don't know, what do we call him?
Well, he's just a guy.
Just a guy.
Yeah, Pleiadian dude.
A Pleiadian dude, I like that one. That's great.
Yeah.
But really, it's remarkable.
He'd laugh if you heard me say it.
Yeah, it's remarkable what you've done, Jerry. And, yeah, I love listening to you tell this story, and all your stories are just really, really remarkable as you are. So thanks again for coming on the show. We're going to have to continue this conversation, though. This isn't over. So thank you so much. My love to you and Kathy. Yeah. Got to go through it all. Well, look, we'll be back next week, everybody, with another great show. We're supposed to do chord magic next week, so let's see what happens. So take care. We'll see you on the Blue Highway. Good night.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.